Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan
with insurancebroker.ie
on News Talk.
If you've been listening over the past couple of days, you'll know we've been talking about eating disorders and the impact they can have on the person dealing with it, their family, their friends. So I want to hear from people who've actually overcome an eating disorder themselves. I want to understand their personal experience and the impact that it can have mentally and physically. Francesca Maria is with me here in studio today. You're very welcome to the programme. You battled with anorexia for years. Is that right, Francesca?
Yes. For about, I would say, 7 years even. Eight, like around there. I had what the doctor said was probably a liver failure. And I've lost a lot of weight. I actually went to, I was clinically dead. I was in hospital for a while. Then I was recovering at home. So I just kept losing 4 or 5 kilos literally weekly because I couldn't eat. I couldn't really leave the house. The doctor said that because of for how long I was without oxygen, obviously, they said that it's not even sure if I'm going to walk again or if I'm going to talk again even, which I did. Day I was kind of talking, but I was just very slow. And then the funny thing is, so I've always been, I wouldn't say, well, I was a chubby kid, but then I wasn't, I was just a normal average size. Yeah. And then after I went through that suspected liver failure, and during the recovery, I wasn't going outside. I became very frail and very pale and very skinny. And people started giving me compliments on this body. Whereas before, when I was healthy and everything was fine, people weren't paying so much attention to how beautiful I look, which I wasn't. Looking back at photos, I look weak and so skinny.
So when did your eating disorder begin, Francesca? When did you recognize that you had one?
Oh, right. Right there and then. Well, I didn't recognize it, but it started there that I wanted to maintain that weight. So I was down to 47 kilos, which is, I'm 5'4". So I was very, very, very thin.
What age were you at the time?
So that's from age 16 until 24, actually. Yeah, so that is quite a while, yeah.
So you were 16 years of age when this began.
Yes.
Did you recognise what it was at the time?
I just knew that I wanted to keep up that body, the way I looked when I was at my weakest, and I always just wanted to keep that up. So I would not really eat and nourish myself. We had to go to the hospital for regular checkups, and they were asking me why am I not, or how are my eating habits, and if I'm able to eat, and I'm like, oh yeah, but I would keep it, I suppose, a secret that I wasn't really eating, and I would just stay the same weight. I would weigh myself obsessively. I would just jump around to lose calories, all the things that you would see, in films, and I didn't know that at the time, but how you would classically, I suppose, portray someone with anorexia. That's all the things that I've been doing, waking up middle of the night, kind of doing ab crunches, stuff like that.
You were involved in the modeling industry
Yes.
at the time, is that right?
Yes.
Did that play a part, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. So I worked with various industries. I did beauty modeling, which would have been makeup products, jewelry, hair products. I got scrutinized a lot there. So you should get your moles removed, you should get lip fillers, you should fix your nose.
You were 16.
At the time, so when I started, I was 17, 18.
Okay.
In that, but still, it's 1 year after I've gone through such a traumatic event. And then I got into laundry, but then I got into swimwear. I think I did that from 18 or 19 okay. to 23. Two or 23.
And I suppose the commentary maybe that comes with that, and it must have been quite difficult, was it?
Oh yeah, no, it was awful. Now it depends on the companies. When somebody says something nice about you and you're that obsessive in your mind, you don't really hear it. You're just okay, whatever. But then if somebody says, oh, you have which I always got oh, you have a big ass. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay.
I can say that. And I would feel, oh my God, do I? And it was a nice compliment. It's oh, you have curves and, you look good. Whereas at the time, I'm 30 now. I'm past 30 now. But like at the time, I wasn't really curvy, but I suppose like for the industry, I was.
When you recognized that you were dealing with anorexia and you know, an eating disorder, did you talk to your family about it or did you seek help?
My friends, they were like, oh, you don't look that thin. So it was like there was no help. And even when I said, oh, look, well, my hair was falling out and my skin was really bad. Well, I had acne, but I had like a fungal infection. And that was also because my immune system was failing because I was just not eating enough or eating the right things. I did run on sugar a lot. So maybe that also fed, I suppose, the fungus that I probably had. So I had very bad skin. So I went to a dermatologist. He grabbed my thighs and he's like, oh, so you're probably eating late at night and maybe that's why your skin looks the way it does, because like look at your thighs, like you have this like floppy fat on it. And I was like, what, excuse me, what?
Oh,
my partner at the time was a bodybuilder and he just said plain to me, well, it's because you're not eating enough, so your body is in constant starvation and just breaking down the fat that you have. That's why your fat is soft. I came across like diets, you know, high protein, which is what I follow now, but obviously combined with training and enough carbs.
And now you're working, obviously, as a personal trainer and you've the whole layer of education around that and as a nutritionist as well. But so do you think that was maybe the moment where something clicked with you that
a little bit that
changed
was,
your...
I think that was like the first step because I still didn't stop. Like I was trying to eat a little healthier, I suppose, but I was still restricting my calories way too much.
Okay. So when did things change? When did you start to come out of it a little bit?
I just kind of started to enjoy life, like kind of trying to go back to modeling, but also I started eating. So at that point I've gained, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it was like maybe like 5-6 kilos, which for me was a huge step already.
So you then started focusing on your work as a personal trainer, as a nutritionist?
No, I just started taking it easy, kind of not restricting myself anymore. But it wasn't until I met my husband a year after that, that I really started to focus on more so like strengthening myself. And because he would always tell me like, oh, you have a really good physique, which was probably the first time anyone has ever said that to me, like, no, it's good. Like you should, you know, build it up. You should own your body.
Yeah.
You should own yourself. You should, you know, be your own person. Do not go after all these beauty standards. And it was basically just him, like he's love for me and support that pushed me to go to college, learn about, obviously, like learn personal training, just genetics and anatomy and everything else that kind of goes into building up your body. So it's not just like surface level exercising and all that. It's to do with nutrition, with your genetics, with your anatomy. So everything. I wanted to get in as much knowledge as I possibly
could. Do you work now with people who have gone through eating disorders?
Yes. Yeah. So I had people who... So both ends of the spectrum, like I had people who were binge eaters, who have lost control of their diet, people who battled with and still kind of battling with anorexia and bulimia as well.
What do you think would help people?
Well, to be honest, it's the hardest thing is just to kind of look yourself in the mirror, in the face and just say, well, is this good for me? What I'm doing, is this good for my body? Am I being healthy? Am I being reasonable? So like I still have those conversations with myself because sometimes I do fall back into, oh, maybe, you know, I see a bit more back fat and then I'm like, oh, Jesus, maybe I should cut out this and that. And then I just go, no, well, I should enjoy my life. I'm working out. I'm doing my best. Yeah. And that's all we can do.
So from as you said at the very beginning, Francisca, like a near-death experience, you know, in the very early days of this and then battling through it and now working in helping people who also have an eating disorder. It's incredible to hear your story. Look, I'm glad to hear you're doing well and you're keeping well.
Yes.
And yeah, and it's great to have you with us here today to share your experience, because I think it's probably only through listening to other people's stories and their personal experiences that we learn really about the impact of all of this.
Yes. And, you know, the journey is different for everyone. And I think it always starts, with you having to realize that when there's nobody else, and there should be, we should be better at, you know, providing those kind of services. But when there isn't, think it through, because it starts with you. If you don't want to do it, and if you feel like you can do it, there's nobody that can truly, truly help you.
Well, look, I really appreciate your time and your story here on Lunchtime Live this afternoon. Francisca Maria, personal trainer and nutritionist, thanks a million for joining
us on the
program.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Listener text here, that, you know, just listening to Francisca's story today, it's my own daughter's story to a T as well. Unfortunately, we're still going through this. You know, the eating disorder in a home, it's like having an evil presence living with you. Says this particular listener. My heart goes out to her and her family, and to anybody that's experiencing this right now as well. Sean is with me in studio today. Sean, you're in your 40s. You're a dad of four, but this is something you've dealt with over the years too.
Yeah, it is indeed. I suppose I consider myself in recovery now, as such. But I mean, if my backstory, really, I can see now, it goes back to, as far as I can think back, I had a complete self-hate for myself and a complete shame over anything I would have ever done. And the pattern I had, like, I had disordered eating, I'd say, most of my life. But I suppose going back to maybe 2012, 2013, I started exercising, basically running. And again, people would comment on how well you're doing, how, you know, oh, you're looking great, you've lost weight, all this sort of thing. So for me, that was validation. It was straight away, oh, you're good at something in life. You're not a waste of space. And the thought then of that, letting that go, was so hard. So it just went down over years. I bought into the whole social narrative about sugar's bad for you, calories are bad for you. And that just really, really got out of hand over time. But in between weighing myself every day, dropping out food groups due to, again, it's, you know, what people will tell you is bad for you and you shouldn't be eating. So eventually, over years, getting to the point where I wasn't eating really much at all. And my exercise regime was like running every day, up at 5 every morning and running for hours, doing marathons the whole way around. It was in my head, I was thinking of ways not to eat when I finished it, because it got so in on me, it just controlled my whole life and it became the most important thing in my life.
So the thing I've probably learned in the last week or so since chatting to you and others and Francisca and, you know, other people that have been with us over the past few days, that the eating disorder it's not necessarily about food, it's the self-image and the self-belief that comes with it.
Yeah, look, that's one thing that I always try to dispel, that myth of it's about food, it's about what we look like. It has got nothing to do with it whatsoever. I mean, I can't describe to you how much I did hate myself and how much I disliked myself. I had no faith in myself whatsoever. And again, it was just deep down in me that I found something that I was good at. And eventually it takes control before you even know it. And it becomes everything, to the point where, and again, I openly say this because I'm used to it, it became the most important thing to me, that I would rather have not been here than not have it. And it's really hard to say that, because obviously people think you're married, you have kids, but you get to the point where you just think everyone would be better off without you, and they'd be better off without you. And it ultimately ended with me being becoming an inpatient in St. Pat's in their eating disorder ward. So the best thing I ever did in my life. I had to go in there. You know, I wasn't medically stable, and it's kind of was the path that I started in recovery.
Tell me a little bit, if you can, Sean, about that experience, because, you know, the services has been a key point that a lot of our listeners have been talking about. Or often it's the lack of services we've been hearing about over the past week. So what was your experience of that?
Well, I was lucky I had health insurance, but I do feel that awareness needs to be heightened. Prevention, I think, is so much more important. But with my experience of St. Pat's, I suppose, when I originally went to my GP, it wasn't really, I think it was just put down to me being healthy. My wife had spotted this years ago, and, you know, I hadn't really admitted it to myself at that point. So it eventually got really serious, and I eventually went to my wife and said, look, I think I have a problem. I said to her, I have a problem with food, because I didn't know what was going on. So I went back to a GP, and then got the referral to St. Pat's. And yeah, like I couldn't, like, my St. Pat's experience was what everyone should get, regardless of health insurance or not. It was
so
amazing.
Inpatient,
yeah.
For how long?
I was an inpatient, I think, for about 7 weeks. And I was on home care. And then I was 12 weeks on a day as a day patient. I did compassion focused therapy for eating disorders as well, which was a massive turning point for me. I was in there around Christmas time, so I had two of my kids' birthdays, my own birthday, and again, my kids are very young. My wife is a primary school principal, so really, really busy job. And it was really, really hard, but I had just broken down. I cried for 3 days straight. So, it's the care everyone should get, because it's not, even when you do an inpatient care, when you leave there, you're not better. It takes years. There needs to be follow-up care. There needs to be follow-up therapy, because that's when it's at most dangerous of actually relapsing. Because, you know, it nearly happened to me once or twice, but I had St. Pat's there.
To go back in and touch base with them and...
Yeah, and they check up on me, and I said when I was doing the compassion focused therapy and stuff like that, they kind of would have seen that, so they would have been able to pull me back. But unfortunately, it's just not there, obviously, in public system to that level.
The services aren't the same. So there's a disparity between what you might get in the private system and what another listener might get through the public doors.
Yeah, like completely. Like where I was in the Clara Ward in St. Pat's, it was specifically for eating disorder. So there was people in there were just eating disorder service users. There wasn't, I mean, we have meal times, you have different things, different. So you're kind of watched a bit differently. So yeah, it's a specialised unit.
When you mentioned to your wife that something wasn't right, you know, and you knew that yourself, sure, and you've said that and you identified that, did you realise it was an eating disorder?
Oh, I think deep down I did. Deep down, it was something down deep down in me that really wanted help, really wanted for someone to tell me it was an eating disorder, and really wanted me to say, you need to go into hospital. So I did know, but I had no idea. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know. I didn't think you could know if you could recover from it. And eventually, it's just like the day I went in, I left on a Sunday and I left my kids off in their nanas, and me and my wife went in. And before I knew it, I was in there and I had been diagnosed with anorexia nervosa. And it was really, really tough. Like, you know, it was really probably the hardest time in my life. It's very, very lonely when you go in and you kind of give up that control. But the other service users in there were absolutely amazing. Mm. Like, they were incredible. So they really kind of got me through when I was in there, you know.
Yeah. How are you now?
I'm good now. When it comes to food and stuff, I don't exercise because I just can't. That was very traumatic for me. Again, when the food noise kind of dampens down, other stuff starts coming up. So there are days with low moods, there are all those sort of things. But for me, I never really used my voice because I was afraid to. So I got involved with Shine Mental Health Awareness, and I've since then I've become an ambassador with them, and I've actually got into loads of other stuff as well.
Okay,
with them.
Yeah.
So and it was just the kind of company as well, and being given the opportunity to talk and stuff. So like I love giving talks and stuff, but again, it's for myself. Like, I won't say it's just, it's
of course,
for awareness.
It's part of your own.
It is, yeah.
Recovery too. Yeah.
It just really helps me, and simple little things like social media would have been something that frightened me so much. I took a massive move and have an Instagram account just to share my experience, yeah, so I can help people. So that
where
was probably,
can they find you actually in that? If you're happy to share it,
Sean Blake 80.
Okay,
I was born in 1981, not 80, but 81's gone. But yeah, look, I what I do say when I certainly with my own Instagram stuff is I'm not qualified in any medical stuff. It's my own experience.
Your experience.
Everyone's experience is different. So that's just really, really important for people
to know.
Do you know
what? Just looking back and from in your own experience and from your own, I suppose, journey of this and from talking to other people, Sean, like, if you were to have an opportunity to talk to the powers that be or the health minister or HSC, and you were talking about how we can improve the services for people with eating disorders in Ireland, what's the two things that might really actually help patients? Or how do you think we could better improve the services we have?
I think, I definitely think first thing is awareness, because I think prevention is so important. I think awareness around sports, clubs, schools, all these different places, because it's just not known. And I actually met Minister Butler. I'd sent her an email and she responded and arranged to meet me and had a lovely talk with her. So we kind of talked about different things, and it was just like, I think to improve that awareness, but definitely the inpatient experience needs to be specialised, like you'd see in St. Pat's and places like that. And again, it's this whole thing where you leave inpatient services and you're better. That's not the case. We need to have therapy for people that suits people. Everyone is different. Different therapies will work. But I think people need to have a connection there. Mm. When they're at home, when they're out of hospital, when they're on their own at home, they need to have someone they can talk to. If they're not feeling great, they need to have places to go, because it is those times when that stuff will fester, when you're sitting on your own and different
things
are
happening. That's when you're likely to relapse again. Well, look, Sean, I really appreciate you coming in to share your story and tell us about your experience with us on the programme today. Sean Blake, before that, Francisca Maria, thanks so much for your time here on Lunchtime Live.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.